Good morning. Good morning. Beautiful day out there. I hope you're able to enjoy it. Yes, last hour we were talking about a lot of local stuff in the city of New Bedford. I got a text message from a friend who's a regular caller and always invited to the show, Ken, that he just tells me when Brian Gomes was first elected in late 1991, Bullard was still the mayor. By the time Gomes officially took office in 92, Rosemary Tinney was just beginning her first term as mayor. So the reason he tells me all that, which I appreciate, is that I was wondering out loud when Brian Gomes first got on the council. And so it does go back. He took office with Rosemary Tinney, and that's a long time ago. So he's done a lot of budgets. But I do appreciate that veteran council of Brian Gomes is inviting with his colleagues, I believe it passed unanimously, the inspector general to come in and do a forensic audit. But I did wonder yesterday out loud, why would they wouldn't maybe invite the auditor as well? And they have an auditor of their own. And I think there's a lot of these reports are available. Just not sure if all the councilors are reading them. They don't have to. It's they're right not to, but there's a lot of information that's available to people. Whether they decide to read it or not is entirely up to them. All right, now shifting gears. We're joined here in the studio by our friend Lenny Mills, back from the Cayman Islands. Good morning. Thanks for coming in, Lenny.
Good morning, Chris, and good morning, South Coast Now.
How were the Cayman Islands?
Oh, my goodness. It was tough to come back.
Right?
It was tough. Yeah, it was tough. As you know, I hadn't been there in a year and a half, mm-hmm. which is like a long time in 26 years. I've never done that.
Right.
It was a nice trip. You know, it's an amazing thing. I was thinking on my way up here when I was driving. When you're away like that, you lose contact with certain people, mm-hmm. you know. And but between flying there, when we made a connection, we flew from Providence to Charlotte and then getting to Charlotte. And then you start to see people in the terminal or going to Cayman's and people will come up and say hello to you.
Right.
And I would to them. And then you get there and you're out in the restaurants and the grocery stores. You're walking on the beach early in the morning. And these people that you've known for years,
right?
You see them and they say hello and you rekindle these friendships and memories. And, you know, even on the way home, a guy came up to me in the Cayman Airport and he said, "Hey, Lenny, how you doing?" It took me a second, you know, but then I had fond memories of him talking. And,
right.
And, you know, a lot of times we had together, and I hadn't seen him in years. So besides, the weather was beautiful, Chris, and the food and the people, and it was nice to be back there. It was nice to have reacquaintances with a lot of these friends I hadn't seen in a long time.
Among those, Paul Overstreet, who you arranged for him to call into the program. Legendary singer-songwriter from the country music world in the Hall of Fame. Really interesting guy. I appreciate that, Lenny.
Yeah, well, you well deserve it, Chris, because you're the guy that really platforms people, and you really put the emphasis on them. You very, very well present people the way they should be. You know, with Paul's appointment, too, I mean, the introduction that this year was really stiff in the songwriters. It was a lot of competition in that, you know.
And right.
I don't know if your audience knows that, but sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. He went in with, you know, he got nominated. He was out in Southeast Asia. He was touring Vietnam and those places. Didn't even know, and he got a call
right.
that he was nominated, and then he got a call he was in. And then when he actually started looking into it, you know, and I had said to him, "Boy, the competition you got here, you know, got passed was really unbelievable. A lot of tremendous songwriters." And he goes, "Yeah," he says, "I'm pretty honored for that." And
yeah.
So that's nice, you know, to see that happen for him. You know, and he's well deserving. Wrote some beautiful songs. Continues to write some beautiful songs.
Continues to. And fun songs.
And the thing is, being with him out there, he has such a library of music, you
right.
know. So any subject, you know, whether you want to laugh or cry or whatever you reminisce on, he'll send me the music. He sends me electronically, you know. So I always tell everybody, through the Hurricanes out there, when I was a chairman of the board and I used to stay there, he'd send me a lot of stuff that related with storms and,
yep.
you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, it was great to be with him. I extended my stay. He extended his stay. And finally, that was it. I had to leave, and he left the next day because he's got some work. He'll be in next week. He'll be in Nashville with country music stuff with Randy Travis.
Nice.
He's going to play some of his songs in tribute to him that he wrote for him. So he's got a busy schedule. He's really doing well.
And his kids are really talented.
Yeah, the children, you know, his kids are. His son, Cord, was on Glee. He continues his own career. He writes. You can look him up, Google him. His son, Nash, he came out. I got to see Nash. It was nice to spend time with him.
Yep.
And he still plays with Hutch Hillray, certain dates. He's got some dates coming up, and he does DJing.
Okay.
And he was in Newport a year ago. He's coming to Newport this summer, I think. You know, he may be on if you want him to come
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it was good to be with him, and he wrote a lot of songs. And it was funny. I was thinking when you were talking to Paul, when he was telling you the story about the Randy Travis song, you know, Forever and Amen.
Yes.
And they were hoping to sell 35,000 copies. That
right.
would get them a deal to with a record company to keep going. And they sold 5 to 7 million so far today of
right.
those. And I was looking at Nash because they had some pop hits there. And he sold over 7 million records, and Nash is just turning 40 this
right.
year, you know. But you know what a contrast. But Crawl, Walk, Run, and in the industry, you know.
Yes.
And so Paul has done well teaching this. All of his children write. All of his children are in music. The daughters, one of them, Summer, she has a tremendous career. You can Google her. She has a couple of number one hits she's co-written and she has out there. So there's a lot of talent in that family.
Absolutely.
Besides being beautiful, beautiful human beings
right.
and good friends. Yeah.
You can check out pauloverstreet.com. It's a really friendly website. Really fun, really interesting. pauloverstreet.com. So you're coming back, Lenny, to town meeting?
Town meeting is going to be Tuesday. Yeah, we have a big agenda for that night.
And when you left, I said, he has to come back.
I have to be back for that. Yes, sir, I do. One of the biggest thing is our second attempt with the MBTA, you know, seeing if the town, we've picked another spot, and see if the town wants to use that spot, you know.
So let me set this up. So basically, for those of you who don't live in a town, those who live in a city, whether it's Fall River or New Bedford, to do zoning changes, normally your city council does them. But in the towns, it's up to town meeting. Whether it's an open town meeting like Rehoboth or a member town, elected town meeting like here in Fairhaven, you have to get a zoning change through town meeting, which is very prickly. And what Lenny is dealing with, because their community, Rehoboth, abuts Attleboro, which has the MBTA, they are subjected to the MBTA Communities Act, which means they have to have multifamily housing, all things that Rehoboth does not have and doesn't have the infrastructure for either. So they're trying to, for the second time, so they're not penalized by Governor Healey and the state of Massachusetts financially and the Attorney General to accommodate a law, which really is very difficult to accommodate in Rehoboth. Go ahead, Lynn.
Yeah, so that was a good way to set it up, Chris, because, yeah, and a zoning change, bylaw change, takes 2/3 majority of a town meeting,
that's right.
as you know. However, the Commonwealth, with its infinite wisdom, decided, because they wanted this stuff done, that it would only take a majority vote. So we're up against that. So it's easier to get it through if people are in favor of it. The biggest challenge is to educate. Whatever the people want to do in the town, I'm fine with. But they need to be educated, because elections have consequences, and votes, especially this vote, has consequences. We already have a backup of $700 million in grants that we cannot get because we're not in compliance by picking a spot. So the big thing is to educate the people in the town and decide what they want to do. There's a lot of misinformation out there. People think that by not voting for it, they're stopping it, which in fact we know it is the law in the Commonwealth. The only real choice the town is going to have Tuesday is, do they want to put it there, where they want to put it? Because
right.
in the final analysis, the Commonwealth's going to come in and pick a spot if Rehoboth and the other remaining towns don't. So we want to educate the people to say, really, the real question in front of you is, do you want to pick your own spot?
Right.
Or do you want to keep holding the line like we have been, and they're going to eventually pick it. And I don't think it'll be advantageous to Rehoboth, in my humble opinion. But again, that's why we have a town meeting run the way they are. I obey it 100%. I respect it 100%.
Right.
Even though at times I think like this, they don't have all the information. We'll try to inform them.
Right.
Not tell them stuff to make them feel better.
Right.
Right. Just to get
it's
along.
It's the law of the land.
It's the law of the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
The land. Yeah, exactly put. So the only question really is, town of Rehoboth, do you want to pick this area? You know, and this is the second one we've picked for them, you know. So that's the thing. They're coming and thinking by holding it off, it can't come in. It's not going to come in. It's not going to happen. So we have to educate that. Some of the constituents get that. Some of them will get it and will never admit it.
Right.
And some of them will never get it. You know, that's just the way human beings are. And that
right.
doesn't make them bad people or us bad people. But I would like to see them vote on the facts, 100% on the facts.
What is up in the air? What is possible to happen to Rehoboth if they decide we're going to stand our ground and not vote for this MBTA district, zoning district? What are the possible things that the state could do to Rehoboth?
So the state eventually is going to pick a spot
right.
for us. And I think there's six other communities or seven haven't complied. And then anyone that's driven through Rehoboth, and of course you have, and
yeah.
you have with me, the beautiful open land. I mean, we have places like golf courses, Crestwood Country Club, beautiful place there. Be a beautiful place to put this housing if the Commonwealth is going to pick it. And then we have a 200-acre piece on Route 44 closer to Attleboro, very close to Attleboro, a couple miles away.
Mm-hmm.
200 acres, prime, ready to go. So we're trying to pick a place to be compliant without being particularly helpful
yes.
with the spot. In the sense that legally we can abide to. We've already picked the spot. The state has a program where you can submit it and get, you know, preliminary approval.
Okay.
We've done that. They've approved it. But that's part of the innuendos and falsehoods at a meeting. People don't want to believe that. They think we're lying to them. But if they don't go with the spot, then we have to let the state eventually is going to pick the spot. That's not trying to scare anybody in the sense that it should scare all of us. It
yes.
scares me that the
of course
state
it does.
Should pick it. I think the people should pick it. So, yeah, we're going to try to educate them. And, again, just telling them things like some people do and some politicians, even in our own town, want to tell them things to make them the people feel better. But it's not the truth, and they won't feel better in the end.
Right, know? Right. No, you guys have the club, the sword, of big government, big liberal left-wing government hanging right over your community.
Yeah, we do. And in a lot of ways. I mean, we have a lot of things that, I mean, I'm elected as an official, as a selectman, of course. You know, and most of the audience knows, I'm elected as a planning board member, too.
Yes.
That's 5-year term. I'm my second term there. And, excuse me, Chris. You know, they come, these things come in, you know, these things come in front of the planning board, and the people are angry, our own people, our own neighbors, you know. But it like, you know, like, for example, we have the solar farm issues, and we
yes.
have one going on now, and people come really, really angry, ill-informed, and people are, there's certain people in town, and that's life, but they gyrate them up, and they give them the falsehood, and they come in there. And listen, it's mandated. You can't stop them.
Right.
It's covered by the law in the Commonwealth. It's just a matter of making them comply to our type of zoning in town and trying to get them to maybe help us out with extra screening on these solar farms
okay.
and certain things like that. And for the most part, they're always, I've found them always very cooperative. But to be angry at your local official, this is exactly what the state is trying to do.
Right.
And listen, the voter, myself included, is to blame. Because you have to get out, like you're saying. We
right.
have a vote for a new governor.
Right.
We can put a new governor in. If you don't go and vote and try to put an effort in to make changes, we're going to keep having more and more of this, and it's going to keep us fighting on a local level.
Right. Right. We have Lenny Mills. He returned from the Cayman Islands. We knew he had to because of the town meeting. Town meeting is when in Rehoboth?
June 2nd, this Tuesday, coming up.
June 2nd. We've got an election here in Fairhaven, June 9th. Make sure you get out to vote for that as well. This hour is brought to you by the cold beer and the world's best chicken wings at Rose Alley Ale House in downtown New Bedford. Beautiful day to sit on the deck at Rose Alley. You never know. We might go there today. You never know.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful day to sit on the deck. Stick around. We'll be right back. Brief break. We'll be right back.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Till he had all he could stand. Bought a boat called the Anchorman. Now there ain't no bad news, only good views. The sky and the water are the only blues. The only day.
Welcome back to the program. Of course, that's Billy Currington singing a Paul Overstreet song, Anchorman. It's going to be a big hit, I think.
Yeah, it's a beautiful written song, and I think Billy does a great job delivering the message. I mean, storytellers are so important.
Right.
I remember the story that Don Schlitz was telling me when he wrote The Gambler, which he used to work on it in his mind going to work way before he was real famous. And, you know, it took him a few years. And he never thought that song, The Gambler, would get released because it was a long song.
It is a long song.
It's a long song, and that's hard to get play, as you know. However, it was recorded the same time, maybe the same month, but within the same relatively close time by Johnny Cash and Kenny Rogers. And, of course, a lot of other people have done. I've heard Blake Shelton do a great version of it a few years ago. But
okay.
It's interesting how Johnny Cash and Kenny Rogers released it the same time. But we know the history of it. We know what Kenny Rogers did with it.
And made movies out of it. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah, and T-shirts and all kind of led to Dole pineapple commercials and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's interesting what a song can do, what it means to people. I think Paul talked to you about that.
He did.
You know, I'm with him all the time. People come up and say this song or that song. He was playing in the Westin the other night, and we were there with the group High Tide, and he wrote some music with them. And High Tide actually 25, 30 years ago was in Nashville. They worked out in Nashville. They left the Cayman Islands, went there and did songwriting and worked on their career. But anyhow, they brought Paul up and he did this song, You Say It Best When You Say Nothing At All.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, 95% of the people knew the song and came up and talked to him. You know,
sure.
And said what it was meant to him and when they heard it or it was played at their wedding or certain things. So, yeah, I hear that all the time with those people. It's nice to hear that. You know, it's nice to hear those stories.
Oh,
In my business, I put on an audition on a house, seriously, and people will come and say, you put that audition on. I told you I had a new son or a new daughter, and they'll introduce them, and they're 20 years old, or they just graduated college, or they got married. So all things are universal.
Yes.
You know, but it's nice to see your friends like Paul
and
them do really well in their business and see them reap the rewards of that, you know. I was talking to my friend, I think he might be listening out there in Hendersonville, Tennessee, Lance Derry, who I went to high school with.
Okay.
And some of you guys are paying attention out here in the South Coast because Lance Derry's a local guy. He went to Dighton Rehoboth High School with me. We played football. We shared the same position as fullback. We played the same position as forward and basketball. We were good friends. And Lance used to be the type of guy that came to every party with a guitar and played, you know.
Okay.
And then right out of high school, the first week, he said, I'm going to Nashville to audition for Patti Loveless's band. And he went out there and he did it. And he said, how did it go? And he goes, I don't know. You know, I was out there a week. He came home. Seemed to go all right, but, you know, you'll see. And next thing you know, a week later he was called and he's lived out there ever since.
Really?
He's a Berkeley, Mass guy, right? And so I was talking to him on the way in here. He plays the last 30 years he's been the lead guitarist for Randy Travis. Sings all the vocal backups and stuff. And so I was mentioning to you that maybe you'd want to have him come on.
I would love to.
Yeah, and great local guy. His mom still lives in Berkeley. And he told me before we went on air today, Chris, he was going to tune in out there in Hendersonville and do it. But they're going to have 44 dates, 7 of which are going to be on the Northeast this
year.
And one in Plymouth, Massachusetts, where they're going to do a Randy Travis tribute and perform. And Lance has been playing with them all those songs, yeah.
Well, thanks, Lance. We're going to have you in. Thanks for listening down there. Everybody can listen. You were listening digitally down in the Cayman Islands.
Yeah, listen there. Come crystal clear, beautiful stuff. And we broadcast live, right? I was right on Seven Mile Beach, and my friend was leaving. My friend was going back to Miami from Cuba, the doctor. Yeah, great story with them. They're quite a success story from Cuba, but a lot of beautiful people, and it was nice to hear yous every day.
It's fun. I remember when Marcus Ferro was flying in Mexico one time. So it was when we just first started doing the digital stuff. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was just because I was first on the, I forget, but he was listening to me on the plane, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it was nice, right? It's really good to hear it, you know, and then, And
so, how was flying, Lenny?
Well, the flying was a little bit of a challenge. I mean, the way up there, the plane had a problem, so we had to get delayed there. But you knew where you were going. And then on the way home, I had to come back. You know, I had the town meeting coming up. My uncle passed away, you know, so I had the services yesterday. Yeah. And I have the funeral services this afternoon. And Christine's dad passed away.
Yeah,
so we were challenged a lot of ways. But getting back... Was delayed because of lightning, and I'm not unfamiliar with that coming up the East Coast. I've probably been delayed by lightning 10 times more than I've ever been delayed with snow or anything like that.
Yep.
But, you know, you're coming home. I got home at 1:30 in the morning, and that's it. I'm home, and here I am, and I miss talking with you and your audience. So,
Lenny, we're always glad you're here. No, lightning strikes, that's nothing to fool around with. I've been diverted. One time we were going from here to Florida, and we had to end up going out to Cleveland.
Yeah.
You know, to avoid the storms. And I got a chance to see Cleveland from the sky, which is really the only way you want to see Cleveland. You don't want to see it up close if you can help it. But they have a nice little airport. It's like, you know, when you land, especially if you've been in a plane for a while, and you know you're going to be, you got to walk. That was before I got sick, obviously. So walking around the airport in Cleveland for hours while we're stranded.
And I think you know this, like the planes can fly in lightning and get struck. They're okay. But it's the when they're on the ground and they're coming in and people are out there directing them because they can't do that. So that's what the delay is, if your audience listening.
Yeah.
As a lot of people know, planes can fly in lightning storms, and actually they're struck at times. But the problem is we were down, we're ready to go up and take off. The plane that was supposed to reload on couldn't even unload, so it delayed us quite a few hours. But anyhow, it's better to be safe than sorry. So
absolutely.
I never get upset on those situations.
No, leave it in the hands of the people who have safety in mind, right?
Exactly.
Because a cowboy might want to say, just go.
Yeah, maybe when I was younger, I would get a lot more frustrated, but I've lived long enough to know that it's not a safe thing to do.
508-996-05. Lenny Mills is back with us, back from the Cayman Islands. We're always happy to have him. Tom Hodgson will be with us later in the morning. Lenny, what do you, because now with the internet you can keep up with the news, the governor, Mara Healey, who I think you might have voted for, that was me, I voted for, Lenny did not make that mistake, I don't believe, but anyway, she is continuing her irrational war with Donald Trump. Now she's refusing to issue license plates to ICE officials, the gentlemen from law enforcement who are here to get rid of the criminal illegal aliens, the child molesters, the drug dealers, the embezzlers, all of those folks, the violent armed robbers that all these Democrats say they want us to get rid of. They just don't want us to get rid. Well, the people who have to do that are ICE and other federal law enforcement. And to do that mission, sometimes they use anonymous license plates. It is very routine and standard practice for federal law enforcement to work with the local state to get a license plate that doesn't come back to anybody. So they can't. So the criminals who know a lot more about being a criminal and avoiding federal law enforcement than you and I ever will, thank God, they understand, and they've got sources and things like that. So they're on the look for these license plates for real license plates with these federal agents. They can track them down. And part of the mission to get murderers, armed robbers, who happen to be illegal aliens, off the street is to issue these special license plates that allow them to work covertly in the public to federal law enforcement. And Governor Healey is saying no, she's not going to issue them to ICE. You can read all about it in Tim Dunn's very informative Boston Herald article, bostonherald.com, or if you follow him on Twitter or Facebook, What do you think of that, Lenny Mills?
So, yeah, I think we might refer to them as ghost plates, right?
Right.
Yeah, and actually in Rehoboth we have a few.
Sure.
Yeah. So what do I think about it? You know, it's ludicrous, you know. So here's the deeper dive into it. Like I mentioned earlier when I first came on, it's important as leaders, whether we're in business, especially in politics, is that we don't tell people things, especially we don't tell them the facts, just to make them feel better. And I feel that the governor, what she's doing is she's pandering to her constituents. In other words, we're not going to talk about any issues of substance. What I'm going to do is keep building on and gyrating on this anti-Trump, anti-ICE, anti-whatever she can get the people, you know, ginned up on to continue to support her, you know, and do that. So it's an easy deflection for a politician to do that. It's hard for a politician to sit down and talk about the real issues and address them with the people. And have hometown conversations.
Right.
And this isn't what we're having. So it's obvious. That's what I think she's doing. I mean, I know that's what she's doing.
Right.
But I think she thinks that's going to help her get elected because it's going to keep people believing that. And there is a certain amount of people that don't like Trump and don't like ICE and that. But it's a constant drumbeat of that. And I think it is just to tell something people to make them feel better, and you're going to try to get elected on that. And I think that's why we're dragging our feet on the audit, trying to get to the election. I think that's why you have the ICE issues. That's why she's running on anti-Trump stuff when things are local in the Commonwealth that we need to address. Meanwhile, we're suffering with all the bills that we've been talking about and the bureaucracy that we have. And nobody in politics on the state level up on Beacon Hill wants to talk about it. She wants to talk about that, her and her people. So I don't think it's a good idea to talk about things and tell people things that makes them feel better because they're anti this and anti that.
Right.
What about the facts? When that's all over with and she's elected, we have 4 more years of suffering.
Right.
Can we survive it to the point of which we can all stay in this state and operate in our families and our parents and our generations to come? What are we going to do then? Who do we have to answer to?
Right.
No one but ourselves. It's ourselves we have to answer to because we're letting them get away with it. You know, if we do not make a change in November.
These utility bills are out of control. And the governor really doesn't seem to understand the fact that it costs people real money, that they don't have the money to pay for basic stuff. You know, used to be the poorest of the poor had trouble, and the disabled had trouble paying their electric bills, and programs are put in places. Now you see regular middle-class people saying, why is my electric bill, why is my gas bill so high? I've done everything I can to moderate my usage, but they can't control the bill, and that's because it isn't about usage. It's the legislature, with Governor Healey's now enthusiastic support, put all this Green New Deal stuff in there.
Yeah, and it's insensibility. They're not sensitive to the people. They don't listen. The governor and those representatives that keep passing these things over and over are insensitive to their people.
Right.
We're elected to help the people. We're not elected to lie to the people or BS the people.
Right.
I'm not going to go Tuesday night to a town meeting and BS my constituents. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to rip their mask off and be rude.
Right.
But I'm going to explain the facts quietly and intelligently, and they'll make the decision. But, you know, the governor, if you're out of touch, you're out of touch.
Right.
There's nothing you can do. If you're out of touch, there's nothing you can do, and that's the way I see it. And they're insensitive to people's challenges.
Yes.
I mean, you have to be involved. I mean, you can't be simplistic and just talk about simple things and this and that. But these things are important to people, and to continue put legislative on top of legislative controls and all these regulations and drive these costs up. Meanwhile, you're not affected by it. It doesn't. It's the people that you represent. You're not sensitive to what they need. I hope that the people really want change and they want to do something about it. I really do, because the only one that's going to suffer is not the governor.
No
matter who it is. It's not the governor. And the legislative and the state reps and all them, they're not going to suffer. They're not going to suffer. You know, they're not. But the people are going to suffer.
Lenny Mills, how important is Proposition 2.5 from a selectman's point of view, but also a man who owns a lot of business property and a lot of residential property, not only in Rehoboth, but around the area? Talk about the importance of Proposition 2.5.
Well, yeah, it's what was it, 1984, I think it came in?
1980,
yeah. I was 20 years old, you know, didn't understand it, but I heard a lot about it, but learned to respect it tremendously, yeah. You know? And so, yeah, that's a control that needs to be there and it has to stay there. But it also is incumbent upon us as citizens not to let them find other veins and avenues to tax us.
Right.
Right? And this is what they're doing.
Yes.
Right? And we're electing these people.
Right.
We're electing. So we can keep talking about it and keep talking about it, and we're going to. And just like in town meeting, we're going to be talking about it. And come Tuesday, whatever the vote is, that's the way we're going to go.
Right.
But if it starts to cripple the people because they're not going to take action, they're not going to make change to help themselves, unfortunately, they're going to suffer. We're all going to suffer. Listen, it's no fun having all the toys in the sandbox and owning all of them, and you can't come play with me, Chris.
Right.
It's no fun, you know, and I don't, you know what I mean? It's, what good is it? And all your friends are outside the sandbox, and they can't come in.
Right.
So, I mean, dude, is this the leadership that we want to continue on? We've seen what they've done. We've seen the jam we're in, and we got to make change and quit telling people things just to make them feel better. Sometimes we have to hear the truth.
Right.
And the fact, in the sense that it's gonna make it's gonna be painful in the beginning, but in the end, we're gonna be better. And we need to make those changes. We'll see what the people do. On a local level, it hurts us. It's very hard for us to keep a balanced budget in Rehoboth. It's not an easy thing.
No.
You know, we talk about it, we're proud of it, but it is not an easy thing. We're working on it all the time. Now we have these non-compliance, and we have those thing, you know, these things that went fund, these funds we're not obtaining, and eventually they're gonna get on the budget. Now maybe we're not going to have a bit of balance, but not as a threat.
Right.
So, but to scare all of us, not just my people in Rehoboth, me too, it scares me.
Right.
Because
you got to make the decision.
Because it's the law anyhow.
Right.
All it is the only decision is, do you want to put it here or there? Don't let the state pick it, because they're only compounding your problem worse. So let's think about who we're electing on the state level, because that affects us directly.
What he means is basically there are grants from the state without state tax dollars that cannot come to towns that are non-compliant on the MBTA Communities Act. I think that, like, fire department grants?
Certain ones, yeah.
Certain
so
ones.
For I have, like, the police station. It needs we got a grant for a little over $500,000 for labor materials. We have 10 HVA systems that have to be replaced. And we were awarded it, but we can't get the money because we're not in compliance. So what do I do if when those start going, or they're inefficient, electric bills get higher due to that because they're inefficient, got to be replaced. They're older units. You can't use the system, cooling system that was once there. You got to upgrade them. So it's a big expense. So that eventually is going to get on the town budget and other things, you know? And so why would you limit yourself by doing that? And why do you want to keep electing people that do that? And then you come to the local level and you're yelling at your local officials and stuff, you know, and demanding them to do something when in fact their hands are tied, they can't do anything. So it's a big picture. It's a local level being informed, and it's a state level. But people are busy, I know, and they don't want to apply themselves, but they're paying the bills in the long term.
What time, where is town meeting?
A town meeting will be held at the Francis Farm facility.
Yes.
It'll be in the museum, which is our largest building there. And it'll be Tuesday. It starts at 7 p.m., and I expect it to be a long meeting, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a long meeting, yeah. Not just because of that, because we have a lot of things.
Sure.
There, you know, for example, like the highway department, I have a couple of pieces of equipment that are coming on, and those things aren't eligible to go for Chapter 90. Which the state money to pay for. So the town has to vote to decide if they want to upgrade for. I'll make a simple example.
Sure.
We have a truck that's 30 years old, and we want to replace it for obvious reasons.
Right.
So the town will have to vote for tax dollars for that. But the Chapter 90 money comes from the Commonwealth. We can do a lot of work with that, not only on roads, but with equipment. So each item goes through, and they want to put a hold on it, and they want you to come up and explain it. So we do. And
sure.
They do an explanation, you know. So, yeah, I hate to be so heavy-handed about the voting, but it is important to get out and vote.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't keep going on the way it is. I mean, you're not cooperating with all these agencies just so that you can keep your constituents ginned up to go and motivate to come out and vote in November as a governor. It's not a good way to govern the Commonwealth. It isn't. No. Let's roll our sleeves up and get some work done. But
we're going to take a break. We'll be back. More with Lenny Mills Jr. from Rehoboth, back from the Cayman Islands. Town meeting coming up. If you live in Rehoboth, make sure you go. It's an important meeting, and you'll enjoy it. Maybe not, but you know, it is really important that you at least show up and participate. That's what a lot of people we recognized on Memorial Day died for, right? Let's face it. They died for the New England town meeting and for our representative form of government, the Republic. Take a break, and then we'll be right back. Tom Hodge will be here in the next hour as well. Stick around.
This portion of programming on WBSM brought to you by South Coast Health. Advanced medicine, more care.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Always a crazy one. Broke into the stadium and I wrote your number on the 50-yard line. You were always a perfect one and a valedictorian. So under your number I wrote, call for a good time. I only wanted to get your attention.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy. We have Lenny Mills Jr. here with us. Lenny brought me back a nice t-shirt from the Cayman Islands. What is this t-shirt, Lenny?
That T-shirt comes from a place called Makabuka, which is located in the same building and the same owners as the Crack Conch. Anyone that's been down to the Cayman Islands knows where the turtle farm is, and right across from the turtle farm is the Crack Conch. Conch is those big shells,
yeah.
Snail shells, yeah, and that's a lot of the food protein out there is conch. But that Crack Conch, it's been there for the longest time, and I was telling you at the break that Jacques Cousteau used to stop there.
Yes.
Very, very regularly. He used to go there, and he used to stay there sometimes up to a week, you know, but he'd come in and he'd come off his boat and his people, and they'd stay there. Divers go there. My son did his certification in the classroom, my son Christopher,
yeah,
in Rehoboth, Mass. Believe it or not, it was a scuba studio in Rehoboth years ago.
Really?
Yeah. And but he did the open water dives and everything right out of the Crack Conch in Makabuka, where your shirt is from. It's a beautiful place to do some diving and snorkeling, and a beautiful place to eat. And it has the history of Jacques Cousteau and a lot of seafarers that used to stop in there.
Glenny Mills, of course, just came back from the Cayman Islands. Cayman Islands, and I have friends who live there. It is one of the safest islands down there.
Yeah, it is. It's I think I mentioned this week on your show, it's the fifth largest financial district in the world.
Yep.
I think 48 of the 50 largest banks are headquartered out there. It's a place where they want to keep safe. It's, you know, when I first was going there, it was under 30,000 people. They're pushing 90 now.
Right.
So they're challenged with that. I was reading this morning, I get the paper electronically every morning, that they have to spend like almost $500 million just on their loading docks and the war, you know, the ships come off,
yep,
to load their cargo. So they're pressed with that. They're pressed with traffic. You know, I think about Rehoboth, and you think all over the world, and it got me to Google on the other day after I talked to you that when I was a kid, the world's population was like 3 billion, and today it's like 7 billion, I think.
If you really? Know.
Yeah. So every population everywhere has grown, so we're all pressed with these challenges,
yes,
you know. And so, you know, Rehoboth's not alone, the Caymans isn't alone, the Commonwealth isn't alone, but the Commonwealth,
well, they're leaving the Commonwealth,
maybe alone, yeah,
yeah. That's
right. if we continue, if listen, we got ourselves to look at,
right?
If we continue to vote the way we vote, we will be alone,
right?
Literally and metaphorically.
You got an opportunity to clean up your yard, turn that junk car into cash today at Mid-City Scrap in Westport. We pay top dollar for complete vehicles. Mid-City Scrap in Westport, we pay top dollar for complete vehicles. It's very simple, but listen to this. You have a small car in your yard, $400 to $500 in cash. Mid to large size car, $500 to $600 in cash. You have an SUV in your yard, $700 in cash. No questions, no games. If you have a full-size truck, get up to $800 in cash. Like I said, really simple. No games, no waiting, just fast cash and a more sightly yard, right? Better. Your wife will be happy that car will finally be gone. Very simple. Call Joe, Johnny, Mark, or Doug at 508-675-7831. Again, call Joe, Johnny, Mark, or Doug at 508-675-7831. Mid-City Scrap, cash for junk cars, State Road in Westport. So, Lenny, what else will be happening at town meeting?
Well, I'll tell you what's happening.
Go ahead.
Keep cutting my microphone. Yeah. Right here. I don't know if I've been away too long or what, Chris. Thought you liked me.
I'm joking. Gonna earn your trust back.
Yeah. I'll tell you what is happening right now. I got Paul Overstreet texting me. He's listening to your show.
So it seems that's like fantastic.
You got a new fan out there, you know.
Good morning, Paul Overstreet.
Yeah, he's going to be back. He's going to be in Nashville by now. But you never know with him. But what was your question, Chris? I'm sorry.
What else is on the town meeting?
So, yeah, we have a lot of financial things. We're challenged with the PFAS because we have PFAS in every building we own, the PFAS pollutant. We have it in every town building that we own, and we have it in some of the residents. So we have to allow for that. So we have used up all of our ARPA money, and luckily I've gotten those buildings up to speed in the last 5 years. They all have filter systems on. They're all working now. The water's all drinkable. However, to maintain these systems, it's very costly.
Yes.
Chris, you know, I don't know if you know about that, but it's very, very costly. So one of the things we're setting up is a revolving account to be able to maintain taking care of these things. Not only the town buildings, like I mentioned, but we have to take care of some residents because the Commonwealth feels we're responsible for that. So, yeah. So these are things that are important because you see the town of Rehoboth didn't necessarily cause the PFAS pollution, but we're dealing with it.
Right.
And then we need help from the Commonwealth. And so now that money's gone, right? So the money that was the federal money. So now we're not getting no help from the Commonwealth, and we have to take care of these things. So that's one example I bring up, but it's not a small dollar amount for the town of Rehoboth and other towns. Because we, for your audience to remind them that we all have, we're on 100% wells. Including commercial, industrial land. There is no town or city water supply in the whole town. It's all wells. So it's important that we keep these wells and our property clean.
And that's also how you can keep the rural characteristic that you have out there.
Yeah, we're allowed to keep zoning. Like we have 60,000 square feet, which is almost an acre and a half. 1.377 acres is the minimum lot size, and the frontage minimum is 200. If you want to build a two-family, you go up to 300-foot frontage, and you have to have 120,000 square feet, and that keeps us spread out, and it protects us from each other's septic systems.
Right.
And we have a lot of wetlands in our town, so if you can imagine if things pollutants get in wetlands, how they'll travel.
Yes.
The wetlands are good filters. I mean, I'm a student of wetlands, but pollutants are pollutants.
Right.
You know what I mean? That type of pollutants. You know?
There ought to be places in Massachusetts where people can live without their neighbors right on top of them, and Rehoboth is one of those. And you, as leaders, have to fight to keep that rural characteristic.
Yeah, we do, and we attract a clientele, like I say, all the time, lovingly and jokingly, would you? Rehoboth people are hard to govern because, like my parents who came out here in the 50s, they got horses. They lived in the city. My mother got horses. My aunt come from Colorado. She got us into horses. So we needed a place to board them. So we boarded them there. And so eventually we moved there. So we have freedom. You know, my father grew up. Can you imagine my father growing up in the 30s and 40s in a federal housing project in Rhode Island?
Right.
A federal housing project. He had to quit school with his five brothers to help support a family. Eventually get to move to Rehoboth with horses, raise his family. I was educated in Rehoboth since I was young.
Right.
And the feeling of that. But along with that is the open space. And with that, you get a little bit of, you got your own little ranch and your own little place of heaven. And, and people ultimately want to do what they want, as long as it isn't infringing on their neighbor or hurting them. You know, we work together well.
And it's all available to you if you have the wherewithal. Right down the road in Rehoboth. Stick around. We'll be right back.
She wants to tell me where to go, tell me what to do, tell me what to eat and how loud I can chew. She even wants to tell me what thoughts ought to think. It used to drive me crazy till it drove me to drink.
Welcome back to the program. That's Paul Overstreet, who was my guest earlier in the week. And he's listening right now, we believe. Lenny Mills is here with me. Of course, he's introduced me to Paul Overstreet, and I'll be forever and ever, amen, indebted to him for that.
Yeah, and as you talk to him more and more, ask him about where he get these ideas for some of the songs, because some of them are very creative. I heard him telling you about Forever and Ever, Amen, with Don Schlitz, with his son. But some of them have some really funny backgrounds. That one has a funny background he'll share with you. And Digging Up Bones, yeah, that's a funny one. That, believe it or not, that was inspired by watching a relationship he had at the time after Thanksgiving, and they were pulling the turkey apart, you know, you're pulling apart the bones up and digging up bones, and that particular person kept digging up bones with Paul, he told me, and so the metaphor worked, and so all of a sudden we have a hit song, you know, Digging Up Bones. So yeah, it's interesting. And he also writes a lot of, through the years, another verse to it, a comical verse to this
I've
song.
Heard some of those.
Yeah, some of them are good. Some Beach, he has another verse. That's a real funny one. That's a real funny verse on that. But yeah, they're very creative, and they love to tell you the background of the stories, and they're interesting.
They are all very interesting, and you could check out more about Paul Overstreet at pauloverstreet.com.
Yeah, if I could, you were playing earlier a Toby Keith song, How Do You Like Me Now, and it's written about a girl in high school and stuff like that. But actually, the truth of that story was when Toby was having trouble with his record label, and I won't go into too many details because there's a lot of contractual things involved, but the bottom line was that was written about the record company. It wasn't a girl. It's 'cause when he